Good afternoon and welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 102.7 Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Today is Friday, August 5th, 2011, and I'm your co-host, Carissa Thorpe, and I'm joined today in studio by my co-hosts, Allison Cole.
Hello.
And Tara Lee Gardner.
Hello.
Feels like forever that it's been, and it has been forever.
I missed you girls.
I haven't been here in like 3 weeks.
Because
I took a week off for the folk festival.
That's right.
And then we were gone to, all three of us went down to LA to the Animal Rights National Conference.
So much fun.
Which we'll be talking about shortly for quite a while and get you all caught up. And today our feature interview, we only have one today, is with Keith McHenry, who is a co-founder of Food Not Bombs, who, I don't know, did we all get a chance to meet him at the AR conference?
I have met him before in the past. Okay. I talked to him a couple of years ago at the conference.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I talked to him this time too.
I didn't even actually realize who he was. Like, I knew I was interviewing him, and then I just saw him on a panel. So I was like, oh, I think that's the guy I'm interviewing. So that was kind of neat, a neat tie-in, so that it's part of our Animal Rights National Conference wrap-up show today. So, yeah.
Nice.
So, what did you guys think was the best part?
Oh, my goodness.
At the conference?
Yeah.
I think just connecting with other people and meeting a lot of people. I introduced myself to a lot of people there, made a lot of connections, and just and then all the new workshops that I attended that I hadn't attended in the past before. So I think that was the best for me. Just lots of learning and also a lot of just a lot of inspiring people to motivate me to continue and do more with my AR activism in the future.
Yeah, I think it was great to see like how much. It was almost overwhelming to see how much info is out there and how many things there are that are issues for animals and how many people are out there fighting for animals. It was inspiring and daunting at the same time. And it was kind of like,
speaking of info, I brought back 20 pounds of literature for Animal Voices. So I don't know if you guys did, but
I did bring. I don't. Yeah. I didn't weigh
it on my
scale. But
I brought my scale too, and it was 20 pounds.
Wow!
Yeah. Carried it in my carry-on.
They that was also really cool. People like encouraging everyone to take home literature to share.
Yeah,
that's what they brought it for,
home,
right?
So
Yeah.
Don't want to lug it back yourself if it wasn't.
For sure.
Useful.
I think I loved the room where all of the tables were with all the information and, you know, putting my name down for all the email lists and to get caught up with what they're doing and find out what they're doing.
It was really interesting to see because, I mean, we're in Canada and we don't have all of the, I guess, the population, so we don't have as many groups.
Yeah.
And we're so used to the groups that we do have. It was really cool to see how many other groups there are out there that I've never heard of before.
Yeah.
And the different sort of interesting things. I think there were two groups there that were about like going to Africa and spreading veganism there.
Yeah. Spreading veganism and stopping factory farmings from factory farms from going overseas to Africa and polluting their land and polluting their water. You know, they don't have a lot of water, and the water that they do have can't, you know, be polluted by these factory farms. So, yeah, it was very refreshing to see, you know, the activism that's going on over there.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know, were there any highlights of speakers that you guys saw?
So many. It's hard to choose. It really is. Like,
Colleen Patrick-Goodrow was my highlight. One of my highlights. She's a great speaker. Awesome speaker. And Melanie Joy, we've had her on the show before. She's an amazing speaker. She's such a great speaker in person, and she's so intelligent and articulate. Same with Colleen Patrick-Goodrow. And they both spoke on the same plenary panel in the morning one day, just to have them both there, like one after the other, was awesome to see them. And and Sam Simon, he was funny. Did you guys see him?
No.
The creator of The Simpsons, man, that was funny. I recorded it too, so if you want to hear it after, I've got it.
Absolutely.
But sort of an activist in the Hollywood scene. It was really funny. I won't get into it, but he made everyone laugh. He was definitely the most amusing and humorous talk of the whole conference.
Oh, nice. I look forward to hearing that.
Funny guy.
That's cool.
He has to be funny. He created this. It's
a requirement.
Wacky sense of humor.
Must have qualities.
Yeah. I definitely think that Colleen Patrick-Goodrow was one of the highlights for me. I went to I think the panel she was talking about was how to avoid activist burnout. Yeah, and it was just like she had to just like go through it. She had so many great tips that she was just like rattling them off as fast as she could, and I was like trying to furiously write them all down, like, that's a good idea, I should totally, yeah, you're right.
She talks a lot about these ideas and tips on her podcast, which if you want to look up is vegetarianfoodforthought.com. all of the archives of all of her past podcasts are on there, and you could just spend hours and hours, which I have done, to catch up on them, just listening to them all. She has a lot of good info on there.
I'm definitely going to check into, she told a story and she said that she had previously talked about it on her podcast, and I want to look for that one.
Is that the one about when she was the pigeon shoot?
Yeah.
That was on earlier this year, Farm Sanctuary in California. They were shooting pigeons off the border of the sanctuary, and she was there just to make sure if any pigeons came on their side that they could help them. Yeah, that was a good story too.
Yeah, it was really powerful the way that she just decided to not, she was watching the hunters to see if they shot any pigeons and would help the pigeons if they fell over onto Farm Sanctuary's side. And she decided that instead of standing there in judgment of the hunters, she would just sort of be compassionate towards them, and ended up sort of having a really great conversation with one of the hunters that, like, she said that she doesn't expect that he went vegan or anything because of the conversation, but it was just interesting to be able to be there compassionate. Mm-hmm. And I really liked her point that, you know, we need to extend compassion to everyone, not just the people who maybe are sympathetic to us, mm-hmm. like in terms of omnivores.
Yeah.
I think that's really something that sometimes the activist community almost forgets.
Yeah.
It seems, you know?
Yeah. It can be really frustrating and really difficult, you know, especially when you butt heads sometimes with some of these people. It's hard to keep your head in the game and be like, you know, this is the best way to go about it, because you just get caught up in the emotion sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Anything else that you guys did in LA that was maybe outside of the AR conference?
I ate a lot. I gained 11 pounds on my trip.
Wow.
Yeah,
in like one week. But it was all healthy food. But
so
still, when you're
good.
Eating out, a lot of raw ice cream and a lot of raw food, actually, but which isn't supposed to make you gain weight. And just a lot of delicious, delectable food offerings, which I'm actually going to talk about on the show next week. So
stay tuned
for that. Yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I tried out a lot of new different places, as well as a few of the places that I have to go to every time I'm there, which are the Veggie Grill and Real Food Daily. Those are like my two standards. And we went to the Newsroom too, which I really enjoy. I went there again, which isn't vegetarian, but very vegan friendly.
Mm.
So but yeah, I will give all the info about that next week.
Okay.
I only made it to the Veggie Grill. Was the only vegan place.
Yeah,
I
me
made
too.
It out too.
Well, if you're going to go to one vegan place, that's the one to go to.
I went there twice.
You know, it was, I think for the Veg News Awards last year, it was voted the best vegan
chain
place.
Or something? Or?
The best vegan restaurant in North America or something like that. Yeah, Veg News is having their survey and their awards again. So their survey's out right now. If you want to go on there, I guess vegnews.com, you can probably find their survey to choose all your vegan favorites, which I've already done. And they're giving away a vegan cruise as the first prize.
Yeah.
I think the fourth prize, I think, is a Vitamix. And that's what I want, because I really want one.
I want to come in fourth.
Yeah, I know. It's like, fourth, please. Like, say no to the cruise. I'd rather have the Vitamix. Yeah. That's my goal these days, is to be able to have a Vitamix that doesn't cost $500 or $600.
Yeah.
So if anyone has one for sale, please let me know.
Oh, yeah. I guess maybe you could check on Craigslist.
Oh, I have. No one has them for sale, because no one wants to give theirs away or sell them. They want them. You keep it forever.
Yeah, for sure. Once you have it, you never
I guess you
let
could
it go.
Maybe like save up $50 a month and just pretend that you're investing
that's
in it
not,
slowly.
Yeah, that's not long. That's too far. I've got other options. I'm considering getting it from the States and refurbished models, things like that.
But yeah,
it's kind of off topic. But.
Yeah. Well, back to the AR conference. I went to the UCLA demo at the university.
Oh, right. You're talking about that last night.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. It was really great. There was a huge amount of people, and we got like this big bus, this big tour bus that everybody went on, and it was just packed full with people. And uh, we did a walk through the university, and we stopped at every building that had, you know, an experimenter that, mm-hmm. and we discussed like what they did, and yeah, it was absolutely, it felt so good to be surrounded by so many amazing activists that, you know, are willing to raise their voice against this. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It felt really good.
I didn't actually make it out to any of the demos, unfortunately. I would have liked to have gone to the circus one, but I had some hotel issues the first day and missed it. But
yeah,
I hear it was really awesome.
Yeah, I hear it was really good too, for sure. Yeah, I wish I could have made it out to more of them.
Yeah, I kind of didn't want to come home. I don't know about you guys.
I was ready to come home because I was away for a week after that, and it was a long trip. I just got back last weekend. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to come home. I'm really behind now in a lot of stuff, so that's what happens when you go away for two weeks.
That's true. Yeah. For me, it was more like, I don't want to leave the sunshine. I knew it was probably like, all I could think was, it's probably raining in Vancouver, and I just want to stay here.
Oh, I went to Farm Sanctuary, too.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome. I guess that was a highlight, but that wasn't part of the LA part of the trip. But yeah, that was amazing. We drove 3 hours from San Francisco to Farm Sanctuary and visited all the animals and drove 3 hours back, and it was so worth it. I'm so glad you got to go. Yeah. Yeah, so if you go on their website, they have a press release on these baby calves that they've rescued recently, and we got to see them. They're so pretty, just sitting there in the grass, and they look so happy. I've never seen like a baby cow before. So
aww.
Isn't that cool? Like, I got to see baby cows.
Yes.
So yeah, that, and asking lots of questions. Got pictures of chickens, and the chickens are so sweet. And yeah, recorded some audio for PRAs in the future.
Awesome.
Good job.
Lots of roosters and chickens, and very friendly goats.
Aww.
Very friendly goats.
I want to meet a goat.
Oh, I love goats. Goats are so friendly.
Yeah. Are there any sanctuaries anywhere in BC that, like, I know there used to be one, but I think I heard that they moved it to like Seattle or something.
There's Hearts on Noses. Yep. That's the pig sanctuary in Mission.
Pig sanctuary.
And the one on Main Island is no longer there. They moved it to LA.
Yeah. Rescue.
Rescue. Yeah. Yeah. That was a really, really cool sanctuary. And I know a few people who want to start sanctuaries, so
that's
maybe
me.
There will be in the... Oh, okay, and you then.
Nice.
People should get together and start a big sanctuary, well, pull all your money together.
What I really want to do is I want to basically create a little vegan community. I want to have an organic farm.
A commune?
Yes, basically. What I want is I want to have a restaurant, and I want an organic farm, and I want the organic farm to supply the food to the restaurant, and the restaurant to supply the money to care for the animals, and then whoever wants to live on the farm and help run both can just live there and peacefully coexist. And yeah,
what a beautiful idea. That's awesome. So I love it.
That's my I don't know how to do this by myself life goal.
Yeah, that's a large endeavor.
Absolutely.
I used to want to open an animal sanctuary, but now I'm resolved to just opening vegan restaurants all over the city. Which I just figure I have a lot of food experience. Used to work in the food industry a lot, and it's in the city. Can't really see myself living out on a farm somewhere, so I think that's more doable. So that's something that my friend and I were talking about a lot during the trip, all of our vegan culinary delights and just all the different restaurants we were visiting, like analyzing the food, going, okay, I'd have something like this on the menu but not this, and a combination of this and this. We're really talking about that a lot because she wants to open a vegan restaurant too. But there's several different kinds of vegan restaurants I want to open, so it would be basically this huge project where you know there's one and then another one and another one. You keep opening them up with all the money you're making, because you would be making tons of money from amazing vegan restaurants in Vancouver. Actually, I think we need more, and I think that they would do well, and I keep telling people that. Actually, a couple people who, you know, who we met, one restaurant owner in San Francisco, this amazing restaurant, veggie, vegan-friendly restaurant called The Source in San Francisco, and the owner, we met him, and we told him, can you please come to Vancouver? We need you here. And he said, actually, I'm thinking of either LA or Vancouver, so you never know. That was great food, too.
That's cool.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think that sometimes when I'm, like, in an area, like, especially when I'm downtown and I'm thinking, like, where can I eat?
Nowhere.
Or if I'm, like, near Davy Street or something, I'm like, I've got no options.
Well, Davy Street, there's Pan's Veggie, but anywhere else, there's pretty much nothing. Yeah.
It's all on, like, the I guess, more east of downtown. Well, there's nothing on, like, the beaches or
anything. You and I were driving down Commercial the other night, and you were telling the two activists that you had staying with you from PETA, like, oh, there's this one and this one. I was like, holy cow, Commercial Drive really does
have,
like, the highest concentration, because it was, like, every 10 feet there was a restaurant.
Yeah, there's lots, and now there's that, it's not right on the drive, but it's the new pizza place that's
on close Victoria to, and Kingsway, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, that night, Tara and I were trying to rescue a seagull. I was in town and I was trying to do some work stuff, and that just went out the door. It was like, I was trying to go to our storage unit, and on my way, there was a bird in the middle of the road, and he was just walking back and forth, all like crisscrossing, and like he looked so confused. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my goodness. And so I pulled a U-turn and parked, and then got out to see what was going on. And there were two undercover police officers that had stopped to help him and get him across the street. Yeah. But they got him to the wrong side that he wanted to be on. And animals, if
he's like, I don't want to be on that side.
Yeah. Like, with wild animals, if they have it in them, like, if they've decided they want to be on the other side of the street, they will just keep trying until they can get there. So he just went right back into the middle of the street. So then they shoot him over to the side that he wanted to be on. And then he went and hid underneath a van. And they were waiting and calling the SPCA and the Wildlife Refuge and everything, trying to figure out what to do with him. And I was really moved that they even stopped at all.
Yeah.
And they kept thanking me for stopping. And I was just like, no, thank you for stopping. I can't believe that. Yeah. Like,
I would be kind of scared to flag down a police car if I had been the first person on scene thinking. But then again, it is a traffic hazard. That might have been their main concern.
No, but then they stayed with him afterwards. Like, he went to sleep underneath a van, and they still stayed with him.
He's like, I'm just going to take a nap now while you guys are here watching over me.
And then they were like, well, how could we catch him? And I was like, I'll just start phoning my friends that live near here and see if anyone has a box and a towel, and I'll go get them and come back. And they were like, okay. And then, so I went and got Tara, and then there were two people that were staying with her for the PETA demonstration that she went to. And so the four of us got in the car and went back to where the bird was.
Yeah.
And the police were there when we got there, but they had caught the bird themselves. And they, like, they turned on the lights and sirens and everything and took him to the 24-hour animal hospital and came back just to let us know that they had
They were there waiting for us to let us know. They didn't just bugger off and be like...
That's a great story.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Fantastic. We got a picture and everything, so we should post that up.
Post that on our Facebook page. Like,
they're undercover cops, and they let us take a picture. Is that smart?
They're just undercover for traffic.
For birds.
Awesome. Yeah.
Birds. The bird police.
Yeah. So just one other thing that I'd like to mention is, because I don't think we've talked about this yet, Fairy Cakes is opening right near Nice Shoes.
Yeah.
So that's going to be...
Next door, isn't it?
I think two doors away. I think there might be like a salon or something
and
in between.
And what's Fairy Cakes, Carissa?
It is a new vegan cupcake shop.
Yeah.
Cupcakery.
So now Vancouver is officially the most vegan-friendly city in Canada, at least, I think, now that we have a vegan cupcakery. Because that's really what we were missing. I'm not being facetious. We really were missing a vegan cupcake place. Now we've got one.
Yep.
Eat a cupcake, buy a pair of shoes.
Yep.
Well, absolutely. I think now we need, like, a vegan ice cream shop.
Oh, we do. Yeah, definitely. Oh, I have ideas. Trust me. That's one of my ideas. I sampled a lot of vegan ice cream on my trip just for research purposes to research my new upcoming vegan ice cream place.
Well, when Joanne and Glenn opened Nice Shoes, I was there the first day and was talking about how I want to open a restaurant one day. And Joanne was like, just do it right now. Do it right here in this, like, there are still units.
We're going to create a mini mall. That's what they're doing. Yeah. They're creating a mini mall.
That's awesome. So that's cool. I'm not ready to just jump into opening a restaurant just because my friends are there, but one day, hopefully.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. So on to a PRA.
All right.
Fruit Salad, Thursday nights at 7 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. Always fresh and unexpected for over 20 years with hosts Aiden Saint and Sky. juicy, in-depth interviews with musicians, writers, performers, queer organizations, and families. Find out how fabulous and varied Queer Life really is. A show for all sexualities. Expect the unexpected. Fresh Fruit every Thursday night at 7 p.m. on 102.7 FM. Catch a live stream at cooperadio.org or on cable in Greater Vancouver and across Canada on Star Choice Channel 845. Contact us at queerradiovancouver@gmail.com.
You're listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 FM CFRO Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Here are our upcoming events. On Saturday, August 13th at 6 p.m., Animal Voices is having a summer outdoor vegan potluck and book swap. This is going to be at Trout Lake Park at 3350 Victoria Drive in Vancouver. So I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be like one last time to get out and share some food at the park. The potluck's open to everyone, and we invite you to come out to meet your Animal Voices hosts. So that's Alyssa, Carissa, Tara, myself, to partake in some yummy summer vegan food. Please bring a vegan dish to share that is one free of all animal products, including meat, dairy, eggs, honey, and gelatin. And please bring all of your own serving utensils, as well as a plate, cup, and cutlery, and a blanket or outdoor chair to sit on if you wish. And bring along your family and friends too, of course. Now, as for the book swap portion of the event, this will be a great time for you to pass on some literary treasures and to take home some new favorites. So please do bring your unwanted books to pass on to others, and there will be books for you to take home as well. Books to swap need not be limited to veg or animal advocacy or cookbooks, though these are all much encouraged offerings, and you might send your books home to someone who's veg curious and could really gain a lot from the info. So we're going to try to get the picnic tables if they're available, but we'll also have our tent and banner and tables set up in the picnic area, so we'll be easy to find. Look out for us there. Also, we'll be having a raffle fundraiser for Animal Voices with various raffle prizes, so please bring your money for that. Remember, we are all volunteer run, and we do rely on your support to keep to stay on the air. So once again, raffle, potluck, vegan potluck, summer, outdoors.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry. Sounds like a party.
Sounds like a party. It's Animal Voices Party. It's going to be awesome. It's next Saturday, August the 13th, 6 p.m.
I don't think you should miss it at all.
I don't think you should miss it either. And it, honestly, if it's just... I'll sell kisses again if you really need me
That'll
to.
That'll get you there.
If you really need me to, $5 a kiss. I've already made some money with that fundraising endeavor.
Wow. Oh
so,
my.
John, if you're listening, come to the potluck. On Tuesday, August the 16th at 12 to 3 p.m., I believe this is it, there's the International Day of Action for South Korean Dogs and Cats for 2011 in Vancouver. This event is happening at the Korean Embassy at 1090 West Georgia Street, in Vancouver. So this year, the nonprofit organization in defense of animals will again join forces with Coexistence for Animal Rights on Earth against dog and cat meat consumption by co-hosting the 6th Annual International Day of Action for South Korean Dogs and Cats. And this year's Global Day of Action is taking place on August 16th to coincide with the first day of South Korea's Bok Day, which literally means hot dog days of summer. Some South Koreans eat more dog meat at this time of the year because they believe eating animals who do not sweat will keep them cool. So if you're in Vancouver and want more information on the Vancouver event, please contact Rochelle. And I'm just going to give you her phone number because her email address is really long and complicated. It's 604-318-9528. And if you have any animal or animal-friendly or vegan-themed events that you want to have announced on the show, please email us at the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
Accordion Noir, your favorite squeeze box show, celebrates its move to Wednesday evenings from 10 to 11 p.m. The boys with the bellows, Accordion Noir co-hosts Rowan and Bruce, squeeze the sounds from every continent into the weirdest accordion show on Earth. And that's saying something. Accordion Noir, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, Vancouver. Or you can hear us anytime at accordionnoir.org.
All right, so now for the news. A few days ago, PETA was in town and they were doing a meat trade demo. Did you guys hear about that?
I heard about it after the fact.
Okay. Yeah. So I hosted the PETA people. They came and stayed at my place, and Emily, she stayed with me, and she had an interview on the Fox. And the radio station, exactly. And we were a bit scared that they were gonna hassle her and give her a hard time, so we stayed up late the night before, and we made some vanilla cupcakes and some blueberry muffins
to give to the DJs. That is a good strategy
to sweeten her up. Yeah. And it totally worked. They were like, oh, you're so sweet, we can't give you a hard time like we wanted to. So so that was fun. And a good vegan outreach tool, baking vegan goodies and sharing it with the non-veggie people. And so the demo was held on Hastings and Commercial, which was outside a chicken slaughterhouse. Have you guys ever been to this chicken slaughterhouse?
No, but I've heard of it and I heard it stinks.
Yeah, it does. It really,
I think I've passed by it.
Yeah, it really, really does. And so they were out there with their with the meat trays, and there were some girls in the meat trays covered in, you know, blood, and they looked like pieces of meat pretty much. It was really well done, and we got lots of pictures taken, and you know, a lot of people that were driving by were really supportive, and people walking by, you know, lots of people took information and were really curious and had no idea that, you know, that was a slaughterhouse. So yeah, it was really good to do some outreach and see what people thought. And later in the day, they opened up, there's like this big gate, and you could actually see all of the chickens in there. Yeah, it was really sad, and it's good to have it, you know, so close to downtown and so close to like so many people, because they can actually see, you know, what the conditions are like, because a lot of people
if
think
they
that,
know it's there, because as you said, people don't know.
Yeah,
it's not
a lot of people don't know.
You don't really see chickens there usually.
Be a good idea to maybe put up like a big banner in front of it, or just hold a sign in front of it like once a week or something, so people know that there's a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, absolutely.
That maybe just says, did you know this is a slaughterhouse?
Or how about come eat your meat?
Great idea. That's a great idea. Absolutely. Yeah, so there were about 20 activists out there, and we got lots of pictures. So we should post those up on the blog, and people can go check them out. And then later that same day, Vancouver Animal Defense League did a demo outside Snowflake Furs. Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard about Snowflake Furs?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, we used to advertise the demos.
Yeah.
That's usually on Fridays. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but I think because there was such a large group of people, they moved after the demo to the next one. And that was really great. There were lots of activists again that came out. We did lots of chanting. We were very vocal. We handed out lots of literature to people passing by. And the police came out and told us that we needed to quiet down. So
you're being too effective.
Yeah, we're being too effective. Exactly. So, you know, when they come out to like tell you you're being too loud, you're being effective. So
that's a compliment.
Absolutely. It's a compliment. Yeah. So that was really good. It was on Pender and Howe. So if you want to go check it out and let them know how you feel about fur, you should definitely do that. And yeah, so that's, I guess, the local news. How much time do we have?
You have 1 minute.
1 minute. All right. So Jillian Michaels, she's one of the trainers that's on Biggest Loser. Mm-hmm. She is urging the government in the U.S. to cut subsidies for what she calls big loser foods. So she's asking them to put in a five-step program that would eliminate programs that support the consumption of processed meat, cheese, candy, sugar, and processed junk food. The program is laid out by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've heard of them. And it suggests that government end direct agribusiness payments, privatized corp insurance, force factory farms to clean up their own waste, reform food stamps, and commodity food purchases. So yeah, it's great that she's, you know, stepping up her activism like this.
And did you know she's a spokesperson for, I think it's soy milk? It's either silk or almond or
Coconut milk.
Coconut milk, right, because she loves it so much.
Yeah.
So not veggie yet, leaning there.
Absolutely. Bob Harper went vegan.
Oh, yes, really?
The other trainer, they used to be on the show together.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And that's where she's been influenced. Yeah. She's been influenced by him, I think.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, fantastic to see.
Thank you for that, Tara.
Thanks.
So we have on the line with us now Keith McHenry, who is the co-founder of Food Not Bombs. So welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio.
Thanks for having us. That's great.
Yeah. Hi, Keith.
Hello.
Hi.
Do you want to first maybe just let our listeners know what Food Not Bombs is about?
Yeah, well, Food Not Bombs started 31 years ago in Boston in the United States. And what we've been doing is collecting food that can't be sold from grocery stores, bakeries, produce markets, and preparing vegan meals that we share on the streets. And our original idea was just to introduce people to how tasty what we were calling at the time vegetarian, but it was all plant-based foods, would be to the general public, and also saying that we could end or stop hunger if we had more plant-based diets and we redirected money from the military towards human needs. And at that time, Ronald Reagan had just become president of the United States, so there was fear he would do a lot of damage to our society and that there would become increased poverty and militarism and that corporations would gain more control. And sadly, 30 years later, that prediction turned out to be quite true. And but as every year went on, more and more people joined us, and now we have groups in over 1,000 cities of the world, and really active groups all throughout Canada for many years since the late 1980s, when we were first arrested in San Francisco for feeding the hungry. And that's when Vancouver Food Not Bombs was inspired to start. And so we've had a chapter on and off in Vancouver since, I believe, about 1989 is when that first started. And then we now have groups all the way in Tasmania and New Zealand, all over Europe, the Middle East, and chapters in Africa, Central and South America. We have a Reykjavik, Iceland chapter, which has been super, super involved in organizing resistance to the banking regulations that are happening there.
Oh.
And so we participate in a wide variety of things besides introducing people to vegan meals, but working for animal rights, the environment, and peace and social justice issues.
Yeah, that was definitely something. I saw you speak on one of the panels at the AR conference, and that was something I was really interested in, was you were talking about some of the different things that you had done in terms of activism that was outside of just feeding people. And I thought that was really cool to see an organization being able to take a stand on all things that you feel are important. And
yeah, that was our concern at the beginning, was you know, we would go to a meeting to stop the war in El Salvador, then we'd be at a meeting to stop factory farming, then we're off to a meeting for the environment, and we realized, wow, all these things really are linked. Why don't we just have one effort that introduces people to all these ideas and shows the connections between your personal choices in your daily life and the global economic and political systems.
Yeah. Can you sort of tell us how Food Not Bombs, once you had the first chapter started, how did it start to spread?
Well, actually, originally it was just a small group of us in Boston, and we would travel to protest throughout New England and as pretty much as far south as Washington, D.C., and it remained pretty much a small little group of between 8 to 15 people. But then in 1988, I started a second group in San Francisco. I moved out there, And in doing that, we decided to take notes on how to start a new group, because the first one sort of just evolved through, you know, our just one stumbling thing after another. I mean, I was a produce worker when I started Food Not Bombs, and that's why I knew there was so much food being discarded. But so we thought, well, let's keep notes on how to start a second group. And strangely enough, we assumed San Francisco would be a very welcoming, liberal city, but the city government did not think so. And so we were arrested on August 15th, 1988. There were nine of us arrested for sharing food without a permit. We had actually requested a permit and assumed we were going to get one. We'd had, for no fee at all, permits in Boston and Cambridge, and there was no one, you know, we were very welcomed by local governments there. So we were surprised, and that news turned out the police had talked to the media and encouraged them to come out. There was a newspaper article and a photograph of riot police guarding the food from the hungry.
Wow.
That was the initial impact. The strange thing is a week later, about 150 people showed up to risk arrest, and CNN,
wow,
which was a new TV company at the time, filmed us, and we ended up in the media all over the world. And so because of that, we fortunately took the little notes we made it into a flyer, and we started to mail that to people so they could get arrested in their own town. So,
see what the inside of their local jails look like.
Yeah, and it's kind of kept going like that. There'd be another wave of arrests in San Francisco. There was ultimately 1,000 arrests in San Francisco, but each wave would encourage new chapters. And then eventually the punk scene, we were also very involved in the punk scene even before Food Not Bombs, and so we were trying to get bands to include, you know, information about our efforts in their, you know, albums and everything, and from the stage. And we also, so after the arrest really got it going, but then there became more grassroots, you know, less legal related ways that the idea spread. And most recently we've been arrested in Orlando, Florida, where they made a law against sharing food to more than 24 people more than twice a year per park. And that's outraged the public all over the world. When we've had more media, and now there's new chapters, another whole new wave of groups starting up all over the world. So, you know, it's at least 1,000 cities do this, and it could be many, many more.
Yeah.
And many chapters do things like start animal rescue shelters. We had 20 cities in Slovakia do that shortly after Czechoslovakia divided, and Slovakia became an independent country. The chapters on that side of the border took that initiative. And we, when the Sea Shepherd comes to ports and different cities around the world, we'll often be the people that provide them the meals after their long excursions at sea, things like that. So we've tried to fit in all kinds of different ways beyond just feeding the hungry, which of course is becoming a catastrophe with the global economy collapsing.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about the situation in Orlando and what's sort of happened, like what the law that you just mentioned, why that came into play? Is it just to try to stop you?
Well, what happens in because of the economy is collapsing in the, particularly in the United States, people will become cold and living outside in the north, and then they move south. So all the southern states, but particularly Florida, Texas, Southern California, Arizona, yeah, have had this huge migration of, like, literally thousands and thousands of people trying to survive. And so in Orlando, which is a tourist town, in Florida and in the southern United States, it's tourist areas, they are feeling threatened by these waves and waves of homeless people and other low-income people. And so their idea was they made a huge number of anti-homeless laws in many of the cities in the South and in Florida. And, well, you can even get a year in jail for being caught being homeless like three times in a certain county or so.
Oh my
and
gosh.
You can't lay down. You can't. Yeah, it's really it's brutal.
You can go to
and
jail. Wouldn't that be a good thing for them? Because
then
no, that's not much of a punishment, is it?
They're horrible. Yeah, the in the you know, well, I did 17 days in jail for, you know, for my crime in Orlando, and they keep the jails at 53 degrees because they're concerned about violence in the jail and about disease. The food, of course, is not vegan at all, and what little food is offered is not enough to keep most of the inmates even their stomachs full at all.
Wow.
You know, there's massive... And there's... laws are, is, well, you're on a metal bed, you're locked in your cell for many hours a day. You know, people just for years at a time sometimes, so they don't know their status or when they might be freed or, you know, what they might be sentenced to. So it's many families are broken up from, you know, many of the men that I was with lost their families because they had no idea when they would ever get out and had lost all hope. So you know, then if you're lucky, you get to work in prison, you know, you get to go to prison and you get to work in a factory or something like that within prison. So it's really a crazy situation. And even though you're sort of getting this food, it's really not enough to survive. So you know, there are some people that choose to be jailed to get out of the harsh, particularly this harsh summer weathers, but then it becomes very, very cold inside. So it's, you know, it's not very good. And it's a stupid solution because obviously in America we have all these resources where people could have education, health care, things like that, but we don't choose to do that. We give it to the super rich, like Cargill, which got billions of dollars in federal subsidies to then create toxic turkey that they then sold all over the United States and things like that. So that's what we're spending our money on, not on really helping our people.
That's really unfortunate. Can you tell us what, I know you mentioned that you went to jail for 17 days, and you had told me previously that I think you're facing, I'm not sure what the technical terms are, but you do have to go back to court for this?
Yeah, I have to go back to Orlando on Monday. I go to court on Tuesday at about 1 o'clock. I'm facing potentially a year in jail for this. Essentially what happened is I'm accused of aiding and abetting in a criminal activity, which is the sharing of meals, and then also trespassing because I was near the area where the food was being shared. So, and apparently I finally have a judge appointed, which I discovered yesterday. So I've been like desperately running. I also already owe $350 in rent for having been in jail and for other court costs because they charge you for everything in Florida. Oh. From like
they charge you for being processed, but
for being in jail. Yeah, you have to pay to be in jail, and you have to pay to get booked, and you have to be paid to have the paperwork for the courts. It's really crazy. So just from 17 days, I owe $350.
Wow.
So
would that be the same during your year in jail? Would you have to pay as well?
Oh, yeah. You'd have to pay every day for the whole time.
What?
There are many homeless people in Florida who their crime is that they didn't pay their bill from an earlier incarceration. And so they then get held. I met homeless people that owed $2,000 or $3,000.
Wow.
For it just in fees for having been jailed.
They
jail you again.
Yeah, I've heard that like the prison system in America is like big business, and now I can see why if they're charging you to be incarcerated.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy.
And the it's insane. And then the taxpayers pay $300 per inmate. And we, of course, have over half of all prisoners on Earth are in prison in the United States. And, it's quite a brutal system.
That's what
and
they mean by when they say the prison system's full. That's crazy. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's really outrageous. Bankrupting our country. Yeah, it's a nightmare. And that's no way to be dealing with poverty. I mean, it's outrageous.
Yeah,
so
our whole country
is really messed up.
It should not be a crime to be poor. I mean, I don't think people choose poverty, you know?
No.
Like,
it's really tragic, and you see we just went through that horrible budget crisis in the U.S., and it turned out, of course, in the stock market, everything starts crashing because of that. Already they're laying off massive numbers of people just in anticipation of a downward economic turn in the U.S. There's actually a crazy thing. We have one abandoned house in foreclosure for every homeless person in America. And in some cities, there's two abandoned houses for every homeless person. So the whole system is completely messed up. So we're trying. And we are told in Orlando, too, that they go, well, there's all these, like, places you could eat. It turns out there's 55,000 Americans in Orlando and in that what they call Central Florida, who don't have enough to eat each month. Many of them are not homeless. They're people that actually pay rent or even own homes. But the statistics show that between 10% and 15% never get enough to eat per month of this huge population, and that's not a very large city. You know, Orlando's a very small community. So,
would you be able to get around this law that they've enacted about parks if you, say, had like a church? I know that you don't want to be religiously affiliated, or like a gymnasium or something that you could serve food in.
We could actually, where they want us to serve is in the ghetto underneath this bridge. In a chain that has got a razor wire around the top. And, wow, the rain is really coming down here. Let me move to a quieter area. Well, that's a heavy duty. We haven't had rain here in a year, so we're excited. We're getting rain.
You're getting it all now.
But our problem is we're trying to change society so that the policies in the United States is to drive the poor and the homeless to areas where no one will see them, so that there won't be any political pressure to try to solve any of the problems. And we could actually go into the serve exclusively in the roughest ghettos of Orlando, but the people there already know what the problem is, and we don't need to be communicating with them about. So, you know, we're trying to be in a place where somebody will walk up, have never eaten vegan food before, and be surprised at how tasty it is, and that they will end up engaged in a conversation about changing society. And you really can't do that inside of a church. People are not going, unless they're hungry, they're not going to go into a church to talk to you. So, you know, it defeats that whole purpose of trying to change society so that no one has to stand in a soup kitchen to eat, you know.
Yeah.
There's no reason why people should be, we're sort of accepting this idea that everybody should be poor and that, you know, we should just, you know, get, you know, fucked and suffer. It's this very strange Calvinistic kind of, brutal ideology that we have here. So.
It's definitely, it seems just like such a hard spot that you guys are in because of these crazy anti-homeless laws. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you find a solution to that? Like, maybe private property or something that you can do whatever you want on?
Well, what's ended up happening because of the political pressure by our having been arrested, there's been 29 arrests so far, the mayor has capitulated in one area and is allowing us to share food at City Hall.
Oh.
And that was one of the 20, that was one of the parks where you're not allowed to share food at greater than twice a year. So in a certain sense, we have that victory already where we've been able to, we've been out there twice a week since I think the last arrest was early, I think it was July 4th weekend was the last arrest. So we've actually shared a lot of meals without being arrested. And this is something that didn't get much media attention, because it was more interesting to cover people being arrested. And the other more positive thing, in a way, beyond stopping that, the ending the arrest by us being allowed to, and it's not the best location, but it's not, you know, it's much better than where they were suggesting, which was under this freeway in a chain link fence. But the other positive thing is it stopped the other cities in Florida from enacting the same laws. Almost every major metropolitan area in Florida, which is a lot of them, we have a very active food on bonds movement, and the cities had been proposing to limit the number of people eating to the same idea. Like St. Petersburg, yeah. Florida, wanted to make it so you could never share food outside at all.
Wow.
Fort Lauderdale was going to do it the same law twice a year per park. So we've actually blocked, through our resistance, the enactment and of all of these laws in all the other major cities of Florida for now. And they're kind of waiting to see how this will play out. And my suspicion is it's such a huge embarrassment. It costs so many tens of thousands. It's estimated at least $300,000 was spent by Orlando to try to stop us, that it'll make it so that, you know, we may have successfully stopped this new wave of anti-sharing laws in Florida. And also in other regions, too, there was a Houston Food Not Bombs thought they might start getting arrested under similar restrictions, but that city's withdrawn their ordinance as well. So, you know, while we have, you know, we're having definitely a lot of troubles. We've got three of us which have heavier crimes that are facing year. We're taxing our attorneys to the max. So we're actually looking for more legal support because of this. And we're trying to raise more funds because this is, you know, it cost us nearly $3,000 in bail so far.
Wow.
And we have another $3,000 in legal fees we have to pay. So, and with the economy going so badly, our supporters have been unable to, you know, we've made appeals on occasion, but it's very unusual for us to even raise more than a couple hundred dollars through each appeal. So, you know, but then again, it also has inspired, like, groups to start up in Bangladesh, groups to start up in Brazil, all over the United States. Another huge wave, actually, of new groups in Florida itself. So, on the one hand, while it's a crazy repressive law, it's also kind of exposed how the way the society is organized, and it's inspired people to come out and do something about it.
It is really great that it's clearly the exact opposite effect of what officials are looking for when they enact laws like these or arrest you for things, that it goes completely the other way and way more people get involved. So hopefully that just keeps going. And
there's also a renewed interest in Vancouver Food Not Bombs, and people can contact me, foodnotbombs.net, and they can call us toll free at 1-800-884-1136. And I met a bunch of people at AR that are organizing the new Vancouver Food Not Bombs.
That's us.
And so it's so exciting that that's happening. So I want to make sure people know locally that this is really important and that we really want people to get involved there. And the Food Not Bombs archives is actually in Victoria, at the University of Victoria. And so I'm supposed to be at some point coming up to, once it's meant much of the original historic documents are input into, I guess, whatever the university's system is, to speak there. And that's like a major honor that they've requested. Like our legal papers, the original notes from the very first meetings at Cambridge, Massachusetts, stuff like that. So
that's really cool. You'll definitely have to let us know when you're coming to Victoria, and we'll announce it on the show, and maybe we can even plan a trip over there.
Yeah.
It's not that far away.
That would be so cool, wouldn't it? You're just a couple of ferry rides away. Yeah. So.
One ferry ride, to be exact.
Yeah,
one ferry ride and a little bus ride, That's so cool.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I'm really excited about that. Now, typically, I'm speaking in the northwest of the United States and Canada in the spring, but we'll have to see what transpires. And then I just yesterday finished I've rewritten, there's a book that came out called Food Not Bombs, How to Feed the Hungry and Build Community, back in 1992. And that book sold 8,000 copies in English. It was translated by the activists in Montreal and Quebec City years ago into French, and it sold about 500, 600 copies in French. And I run out of copies of it in all languages that it's been published in. So I rewrote the book, and I just completed it yesterday. And it's with a woman that I'm working with here who's editing it, proofreading it. And it should be out in October. And it has vegan recipes for 100, vegan recipes for 6 people. It tells a brief history of Food Not Bombs. And it provides you with detailed information on how to start a chapter.
That's awesome.
How to keep on going and all that. So.
Cool. Okay, we'll have to look for that. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Keith, but we're all out of time.
Yeah, I'm amazed you have this much time. That's so cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Keith.
Okay.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. As I said before, on next week's show, I will be presenting a travel segment for compassionate eating recommendations for Los Angeles based on my recent trip there. So we'll definitely be sharing all the new places that I tried out that I haven't talked about on the show before. For a feature interview, I'm still working on that, so it'll be a surprise for next week. So remember to sign up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. We made it to 400 group members last week, which is great. So now let's get it to 500. You can also join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, and please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And there's our website as well, of course, animalvoices.org. Krista, do you want to tell us what song we're going to be listening to?
In sort of honor of Keith talking about Food Not Bombs, this is Michael Franti, Bomb the World. So it's about how you can't bomb the world to peace through bombing them.
Thank you for listening, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Behind the colors that you fly, love just one nation. Whole world we divide. You say you're sorry. There is no other choice. God bless the people now who cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies. Bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find a solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Violence brings one thing, more and more of the same. Military madness, the smell of flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, stand up if you're still sane. All of us gone crazy.